Clients so bogged down in managing agencies, they can't quite actually do any work themselves. This week, we're talking client-agency relationships, what works, what doesn't, and is there a better way for clients' agencies to work together. Also this week, content. Following the IAA's panel discussion last night on fluid content, what exactly is content, why are the battle lines being drawn, and what makes it so strategically important for brands right now to be embracing it? And following our discussion of Magnum, the projects, Special K, and Nokia, Plenty Aside are popping up. Why is popping up so popular right now? This is the PhD Cast. Hey there, and welcome to the PhD Cast. This week, joining me, I've got a podcast regular, Stuart Gurney.
Hello.
And Nicola Davey.
Hello.
And also Mitch Long.
Hi.
And Amy Francis is here as well. So we're here to talk about, first up, agencies and collaboration. Nestlé, early this week in the pages of Ad News, suggested that marketers have become so bogged down in the process of managing their agencies, they can't actually get their jobs done. This has been responded to, of course, yesterday from agencies, including our very own Lee Terry, who's the chief executive of OMG here across Australia and New Zealand. And he said the tragedy is the world gets more complicated and requires more thought exerted upon adapting to the transformation around us and how to capitalize on it. Costs are squeezed, margin eroded, and therefore thinking time gets marginalized too. Guys, agencies, clients, complicated worlds, more and more partners. How big a problem do we think this is, and is this something that we've come across in terms of what we do and how we do it?
Yes, all of those things. I mean, I've sat in many a meeting where there's lots of different agencies all goading for the lead opinion and fighting and not producing the best work in the interest of the client because they've all got their own agendas. And that's just the nature, I think, of having lots of different fragmented agency resource. And it's also a product of not having a clear process around how to manage those agencies. So, everyone knows me, knows I love structure and process. So
do you like a process?
I do like process and structure, as long as it's accompanied by structure. So I think that's that, and that for me is always the way forward, just making sure that everyone is clear of what they're doing, understand their role and how they contribute to the total process.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the responsibility does come down to the client on that. They're the chief in that camp, really, and I think of them as being a bit of the team manager, and while there's they're there to orchestrate great work from lots of agencies, and as you said, those agencies are all going to be vying for a bigger slice of revenue pie, for a really overused analogy. But it's for that client to really set down what the ground rules are and to create a happy playing field so that those agencies can collaborate well together. But I'm afraid ultimately it does come back to great clients who are great at doing that probably producing the best kind of work.
And I guess the other kind of added dimension that's probably not been discussed is the hierarchy that we have to operate with clients. So quite often the senior person that the agencies deal with isn't the most senior person in the agency, and therefore they're not the ultimate decision maker. So
in
the client's organisation, which ends up meaning you're managing layers and layers and levels or levels of different hierarchy and different opinions, which just makes the process complicated. So for me, actually putting it back into the seat of marketeers, it's about having autonomy and authority when you're managing agencies.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not when we talk about a client, we're not talking about necessarily the person who briefs us. We're talking about that client's business and looking at the structure of that client's business, looking at the autonomy and the way that responsibility gets cascaded through that team, but also what the culture of that business is about. And they fundamentally have to have the right culture inside so that they can foster the right type of culture externally with partners is kind of the way I see it.
And so it was David Morgan that kicked this off last week. He's the Director of Corporate Communications and Marketing Services. And what he said is that they're getting stuck in the middle, they're getting stuck in operations, they're getting stuck in process management. We're spending so much time doing things that are not core to our trade of marketing that's taken up our ability to do our trade of marketing. He pointed out that they could be managing 8, 9, 10 different agency groups, digital, media, creative, strategy. Do we need all these groups? Do we need this many agencies doing this many things on every single brief?
Well, it's mainly clients wanting and striving for the best resource and the leaders in any field. And because of that, because of increased fragmentation, that means you have to have more, well, in their opinion, I mean, that's not necessarily true, you have to have more people around that table.
More
and
specialists.
More specialists, yeah, exactly. And I guess the challenge is then just understanding that you don't need to fragment your services continually. You can have a couple few central partners that drive the process and some periphery ones that sit around it that implement specifics. I think search often gets is a great example of that. So quite often lots of clients that I work on, the search agencies will be there in the major briefing, but they won't shape the idea, but they'll be there absolutely there to deliver their specialism and drive the thinking from a total comms point of view right into their special areas, and that works really well. It gets more fragmented and more complicated when you're moving into more consumer facing and more kind of creative spaces, and that for me is where the conflict really lies.
And the conflict, and Stu, you've written previously about the tyranny, as you describe it, of the big idea. Is that where we run into trouble, because there's a sense of there is this mythical big idea and someone's going to own it, and that's where you get perhaps some of the tension?
I mean, there's a whole load of thoughts on that. So as an industry, we cover it. Like, our awards are geared up for this big idea. I mean, we've just come back from MFA judging, and it's a prerequisite in the criterion to have a big idea. Not all campaigns have a big idea. They just might be really well sought out and thought through media ideas and phasing, for example. Because of that big idea, that big central thought, that means that there's something that is more ownable and agencies fight for, especially when you've got the media agency who tends to be owning the consumer and the consumer insight. You've got creative agency who traditionally own the creative thought. You're all trying to have a part of that big idea and all fighting for it, when actually the reality is it should sit in different spaces depending on the brief.
Mitch, let me bring you in at this point, because you haven't got the best part of a decade behind us that we dinosaurs do. What's your perspective on this, as someone who's newer to this game? What's your perspective on this sense of a big idea and the campaigns should have a big idea?
I think, like, definitely, like Stu said, you do have this sense that, like, media agencies and creative agencies fight for ownership of the idea, and, you know, we live in a world where there can be creatively led ideas and there can, on the other hand, be media led, you know, big ideas as well. So I feel like the client's role, I guess, is more, rather than managing down into these different silos, it's to sort of foster a bigger collaborative network across all these different specialists, because the reality is, with the fragmentation that media has today, we need to have these specialists. We can't ignore it if we want to sort of move ahead and be progressive.
I would say, I don't know, we always talk about, as an industry, about collaboration, and it's always a really hot topic. And I think, yes, collaboration is very important, but also so structure within that. So understand. I mean, it's nothing worse than all going.
But you have got that written on a T-shirt.
That's what I mean by how I think about clients as being these kind of, managers of football teams, because a football team work together. Yet they have their positions, so therefore there is this structure. So they kind of know what the realm of their responsibilities are, and at what point it becomes a responsibility of someone else. And it's definitely the client that provides that structure.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote an article donkeys years ago as part of sort of an IPA course, which was all around Clive Woodward and why every client should have a Clive Woodward. They should have this uber coach who's responsible not for what happens on the pitch, but is responsible for what everyone's doing on the pitch, to make sure everyone's in the right place. And if someone's in the wrong place on the pitch, they're like, oi, get over there.
Yeah.
The client's got to own this. They've got to own this process. I'll never, ever forget a big telecom that I worked on in the UK. Every 2 weeks, we'd all sit around, we'd have an all-agency meeting, we'd go through all the work that was on the table, all the briefs on the table, and there was this really collaborative, this really everybody working together. There were 6 or 7 different agencies around that table, and it all worked together for one reason, that it was unacceptable for us not to work together, and the client was in the room, the client was part of that, and they ultimately... we all knew what was expected. We all knew what we had to do, and then the client was there owning that and making sure it happened.
Or they're in the room for the one reason, they get paid the same, which is the other issue. So especially for those clients where we work on a commission base, and commission based system still works in media in this country much more than it does in different markets. But if we're having to invest resource and time from people's time into that regular meeting without a tangible output and benefit, we just can't do it. We have very tight margins as an industry as it is, and we can't, as a media agency, resource that level of collaboration and integration without being remunerated properly.
Yeah, I think that picks up on a point that Morgan kind of gets to, saying that I think in this ideal world, he wants to be able to pick up the phone to just one person and have an update on what's happening from a campaign point of view from this one person. The reality, there isn't that one-stop shop. And the other reality is that the demand and supply of time does put stress and pressure on the degree to which we can client service. That's not to say that as an industry we're taking the foot off the gas on delivering great client service. It just means that we're not always just working and servicing that one client. We're stretched and we're pulled because of the remuneration issues that that Stu talked about. So I think that there's that, the value that needs to be discussed as well, and looking at demand and supply of services.
Amy, let's bring you in at this point, because ultimately you're largely responsible, and certainly here for that client relationship and making sure that we have great client relationships. What do you think is the best way to build that trusted relationship with a client? How do you approach managing the resource and managing that relationship so that we have this sense of trusted partnership that the Art Bernard News talks about?
I think it's more than just our agency relationship with the client. It's actually our relationship with our agency partners as well that is really key. I think it's important that clients are really looking for us to work closely with our agency partners, but also ensure that we're still delivering our area of expertise.
Do you think that's an interesting language around partners, though? Like, I mean, I don't think sometimes I sit in that room and I don't see creative agencies or different PR agencies, different agency leads seeing us as equals. Do you experience that yourself? And B, do you think, what can we do to solve that?
I think it happens to varying degrees. I mean, there's some agencies that we'll work with that very much see us as a partner. I think the area it becomes most complicated in is actually around communication strategy, because that's traditionally been the home of the creative agency, and that's how they continue to own the client relationship. That's no longer the case with the expertise that we have in media agencies, so I think that's the greatest area for most client relationships.
And is there a right answer? Is there a right or best answer in terms of who should be leading that communication strategy?
The clients, for me.
Yeah.
It goes back to what Nicola said earlier. Absolutely, the clients. And I think there's an interesting comment to the article that's in Admit around David Morgan. This is a very genuine plea from a client saying, help us.
Yeah.
And it feels like the agency reaction that's come back is, clients aren't brave enough. We're not remunerated properly. Like, this is some serious, serious problems.
Yeah.
Let's solve them and not just keep having this continual battle. Let's make sure that we're giving the right value to our clients and being paid for that value. And that, for me, is just still the fundamental question. So until we can work that out from an agency land and a marketing land point of view, this conversation, and it will get increasingly complicated because there'll be more fragmentation.
Yeah, there's only one direction of travel here, which is more specialists.
Yeah.
And more complicated. I mean, we haven't even begun to with any real critical mass, start to think about how we deal with connected TVs,
data,
and how we start to ad serve in a digital way on TV. We haven't even begun to think about how all that starts to happen. This gets more complicated before it gets simpler, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what are the first best steps in that? I mean, who can help us through this? Is this an MFA conversation? Is this an ADMA conversation? What's the best way through to this new relationship, or to start to get some ground rules in place?
Then yes, it would be an MFA ADMA conversation, but at the same time, it's going to take a client to restructure and think differently. It's got to be a big P&G, Unilever. Someone's got to take this challenge on and make it work for their marketing organisation and work with that agency differently to set a new model. Only when that happens will there will something people to emulate or to at least try. But I think there just needs to be clients trying experimenting different ways of working and stop reverting back to collaboration as a fix-all solution, because it isn't and it won't ever,
because that feels like a straight away very exported, you know, I'm exporting,
go and collaborate
that. Yeah, go and collaborate and come back to me. But it's kind of like we need to fix that from the start and then kind of create this opportunity to collaborate.
Yeah,
and I think I agree with Stuart, it definitely has to happen with not just one client, it has to happen across a number of client groups, because I think in the past we've seen the number of clients try and set up business groups outside of, you know, kind of the traditional agency structure and without scale behind that, and the agency actually changing their model slightly, it won't work because it needs more than just one client to do it.
Mm.
Cool. So perhaps no area is more contentious and interesting right now than the area of content and how content's emerging. And last night saw the IAA, the International Advertising Association, host a panel discussion on what they termed fluid content and why content is no longer the domain of the few. Mitchell, Nicola, you went along to the event last night. Tell us a little bit about what the event was. He was there, and what went down?
Okay, so we had like varying perspectives from media side, client side, people like Aaron Mish, Chief Innovation Officer from Zenithopter Media. He hosted the session. We also had Michael Brenner from Powered by Nine, Josh Gaudry, Marketing Manager of Innovation Lion, Adam Carroll from Director of Business Development of Outbrain Australia, and David Raitt, who's a Sales Director in the for Spotify. So basically they had a multifaceted perspective on how content, I think the main sort of gist of it was that it's nothing new, and content's been around for ages, and I think it's more as a result of there being less of those mass audiences that we can target, you know, today than there were, say, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago with the increased fragmentation of media. So there is this shift that brands are facing from being able to put their brand out there to these mass audiences and just having people respond, to having the need to create authentic content that people want to engage with and have a deeper experience with the brand. And I think the key word that sort of came out of it overall was that there is this need to make content authentic, because people are sort of just feeling the need to create content for the sake of it and thinking that it's going to stick when it's not. So that's the challenge I think that we're facing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's two things that stuck out for me. One was absolutely about it being authentic and about it being really audience focused. And the other thing, it was really great to have Josh there talking about it from the client's perspective. And Lion Nathan does sound culturally that organisation has got things kind of geared up in the correct way that allows this collaboration. And they talked about their approach to their relationship with partners and talked about this village model that they've got, which essentially is set up in a way so that it harnesses the specialities of the different agencies that make up the village. But it was great to hear it from the client perspective that, you know, that's their initiative, that's their way of that they want to kind of set up and use their agency partners, and they're doing it in a way that means that they can be nimble and do things, kind of take risks and be that brave client that has been referred to in that previous Avenues article.
Yeah, there definitely was this sort of sense that clients need to be prepared to take on a lot more of a higher level of risk to create effective content in real time, because a lot of the time when you have these events that happen, like for example the royal baby being born or whatever, just sort
and
of,
what a hoo-ha that was.
Yes,
hoo-ha.
So you know, people sort of, to piggyback off the back of that, they really had to respond in real time. There wasn't really the same depth when you plan media to have those levels of approvals going through. It really sort of has to be off the back of what happens and happen in real time. So they really need to sort of accept that level of risk that maybe their response isn't going to go down the right way, or maybe it's going to help increase the impact of their brand.
Content is one of those words like digital.
I'm annoyed already by this conversation.
It can mean a lot of different things to lots of different people. What is content? For anyone who's listening who isn't 100%, when we talk about branded content, what is it? And why is it becoming so important?
Oh, exactly. I don't know anymore. I mean, content is everything, and it's now become a generic term for anything that's non an ad, a non-TV ad, actually. And it's not that. Content is... It's just a buzzword. I think we have to be more specific. It's like when digital first emerged, everyone kept saying digital. And actually, hopefully now we're getting to a place where no one says that in a meeting.
Well, I never thought digital would catch on.
Yeah, exactly. It
shows what I know.
Exactly. Go on.
It's a spectrum, isn't it?
It's always
a
spectrum.
It's, content can be real time, need to turn something around tomorrow in reaction to something.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be a formulated strategy that
could be a movie.
You planned out for 12 weeks. But it really just comes back to what the client needs are at the time. So.
But, content, basically, it's become a hot topic because there's a realisation across different organisations they can make more money from it. That's simply...
Make more what?
Make more money.
Make more money.
More money. and that's why it's become a big issue, and that's why it's become a focus for different agencies. It's a new specialism that people can jump on. I'm still dubious about some of the things that you guys were just talking about in terms of... non-traditional media and not being able to reach people. Yes, you can, of course, but for me, the thing that we always go back to is that content is not proved to deliver to the bottom line, and this is why clients aren't doing it. It's not about bravery, it's about prove to them that it will drive your business in this way, they'll do it. That's a fundamental basis of what our role is, working with clients. So until we can get that done, until we can get examples of how we're doing that, then the content becomes, this content question becomes pointless.
I think there was also this discussion last night around there being certain brands which were better at, more suitable to create content than other brands, perhaps.
And which brands were those?
Josh Gaudry from, Lion said basically he's a beer brand and, those sort of things, but they create a lot of content, obviously a lot of alcohol brands and sort of that high level of engagement. But he said arguably FMCG clients, for example, some of those out there, clients don't really have that deeper level of engagement or care factor with those products potentially. So there was a bit of debate whether content was suitable for those, but I think it's more down to the execution of what that content or what utility that content provides.
Absolutely. That's why I completely disagree with that point. So my favourite example of branded content would be Sage bringing back the Krypton Factory in the UK. So awesome programme with lots of credibility. Sage, pretty boring, low interest category, some finance software, who really cares? But it took a brave marketeer to bring that back from by linking a brand to that property.
And I believe that was the PhD drone project as well.
Well, I think it was. But so I completely disagree. And it's interesting as well that because FMCG is less interesting potentially, then it's got more credibility. That for me feels counterintuitive to use branded content. I think any single brand has the opportunity to use. I'm actively avoiding the word content, using communications in a way that is more engaging and driving a different level of depth.
And that did come up yesterday in terms of it's not about it's not about what the product is, it's about what the brand stands for and represents. And so if we're thinking about how brands communicate, absolutely, you fall into the content trap of when you think about how brands or how products talk about themselves. But when you find, with the Sage, for example, there was a clear idea of what value it can add, or what's their purpose, and then you can get much richer communication ideas off the back of that.
And there absolutely is a content trap, in the same way there's a digital trap, in the same way there's a data trap, where you jump onto these things, and before you know it, you're doing stuff to serve the silo, rather than asking, what can this specialist do for me, and the connections that I want to make between a brand and the people that I want to reach with my communications.
Yes. And I think I've seen a couple of client examples where their contractors said, we want to do a piece of content. What do you mean? That's the most ridiculous thing you could possibly ask. There are more ridiculous things, but in the scale of ridiculousness, that is pretty high up there. Spectrum, as anyone would say, of ridiculousness. I think, what do you mean? Give us a communication challenge, we'll answer it with whatever's right. And if content, if deeper engagement, if stuff that's going to drive more equity is more appropriate for that response, then we will tell you that.
Yeah, and that was an outtake from yesterday, so I don't think you would have been entirely crossed about the whole panel discussion. And there was, everyone there was kind of going, there is a role still for traditional, using inverted comma fingers, like friends, for TV and outdoor and other broadcast interruption model type advertising. So yeah, it was quite an interesting chat last night.
And what were your biggest takeout? If there's one thing you took out of the panel debate last night, what was the one thing you took out of it? What was the one thing you might do differently or think more about, or that you might have taken away from that?
I think two things. I think the number one thing, going back to the authenticity of content, I think was definitely what brands need to consider when they're making content that's actually going to give some sort of benefit to the client, rather than just putting out there expecting people to just flock to it. And the other thing was the concept of, they talked about planned agility, I guess in real-time marketing, where you sort of have that, you know, special sort of piggy bank of money aside for when you want to respond in real-time to things that happen, you know, big events and things like that, that you can potentially leverage with your brand, which I thought was very interesting, because that sort of goes against traditional planned media, where we sort of have everything planned out and forecasted for months in advance. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the authenticity is actually quite a stretchy word, because it comes back to things that Stu said. It needs to be really authentic to solve the business problem. The actual content needs to be authentic, so that people actually want to give a crap and watch and engage, or listen and engage, or whatever it is that the desired outcome is. So yeah, I think being authentic and just not doing it for doing its sake was my outtake.
Cool. And last up this week, pop-up everywhere. We spoke a couple of weeks ago about Magnum's pop-up shop. This week, it seems to be the nation's caught a rash. Special K, for the pop-up pay with a tweet. Stop it. Special K popped up with paying for the tweet. The projects have opened up a tropical pop-up office. Guys, what's happening? Pop-up, it's back.
Lots it's never pop-up. Gone away.
Yeah, did it ever leave?
Can you ever be in a brainstorm, ideation session, whatever you want to call it, brain thought shower? Can you ever be in one of those things without pop-up coming up? No, you can't. It always comes up as an opportunity.
Like a flash mob.
Like a flash mob.
Maybe we can do a flash mob outside of pop-up.
Pop-up, yeah.
You could do it.
And some content around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, great
shall
content.
We? Awesome.
And we're done here. Is there something that's making the idea of pop-up, the idea of something not existing permanently, it's temporary, is there something right now about communications, is that making that a right solution? Because it's not coming up by accident. Is there something that makes that really right? Is it about getting on people's agenda? What is it that makes pop-up the right idea for a lot of different situations, clearly, because that's why everyone's doing it, or a lot of people are doing it.
I think it's coming and come back because it can cater for a lot of different solutions. Like in terms of retailers, it almost gives them a low risk option to have a shopfront. For people that want to make content, then it's a really cheap production almost of it. So, you know, you've almost got this real estate that you can use versus a TVC that could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. I love the pop-up.
I'm not a
cynical.
I'm
with you.
No, I'm with you. I do. J'adore le pop-up.
Yeah.
Rose-petaled
Magnum. Yeah. For those who haven't seen the Nokia pop-up on George Street, you go past. That is a slick, very well executed pop-up store. The experience or the likelihood that I might consider a Nokia phone because of that one activation is probably low, so the effectiveness of this pop-up, from a brand investment point of view, is, I'm guessing, quite low. But it does make you reappraise. It does look very cool. It is right opposite Samsung. It's down the road from Apple. It gives them a bit of real estate on the high street to have that one-on-one contact with people. So
it almost forces people to engage in the brand. It really does. You can't walk past a pop-up and not have some kind of thing.
Well, let's all get out of here and go to the Magnum pop-up shop then. Thanks for popping in today. Time for us to pop off. Thank you very much for your time. Mitch, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Nicola.
Pop-up.
Amy.
Bye.
I'm Chris Stevenson, and thank you for listening to the PhD. And we'll be back next week.
get more from PhD Australia, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus at PhD Australia.